You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about recent reports of attacks against political candidates and how the Green Party believes we can advance the interests of the farming industry in a climate crisis world. Here is that interview. We've seen in the lead-up to the election that there's been reports of violence against political candidates, particularly Māori and women candidates, and many candidates have described this as being more than normal. Has the Green Party felt this?
Well, yes. I have to say it's not confined to us, obviously, but we have certainly noticed an increase in the kind of verbal abuse, both kind of online and in person. I haven't had any acts of physical violence reported to me for Green candidates at the moment, but obviously it is worrying that we see that with other, candidates for other political parties.
Why do you believe that we might be seeing more reports of violence and threats against candidates this election year?
I think that there are a lot of different reasons that are coming together. I think part of this is driven by the kind of imported culture wars from the United States. I think some local MPs and political parties here are using language that, whilst it doesn't directly call for people to commit acts of violence, it does create a sort of a permissiveness or an environment that people who are sort of inclined towards racist or misogynist language or violence feel emboldened and empowered. And I think, frankly, that social media has got a lot to answer for as well. So I think there's a lot of different drivers for it. I don't think that we can simplify it and put it down to one thing, and I don't think we should, because then we wouldn't be able to settle on any kind of solution.
Many of these attacks have been attacks that are racist. For example, Labour MP for Northland, Willow Jean Prime, has said that she experienced the worst racism of her career after a crowd shouted at her for using te reo Māori during a candidate debate. And we also saw that Te Pāti Māori candidate Hannah Rafferty Maipi Clark has also experienced a string of racially targeted abuse. Chris Hipkins was asked recently, as well as Christopher Luxon, if New Zealand is a racist country, and they said no. Do you believe that New Zealand is a racist country?
Well, I think Debbie Ngāre Wapaka from Te Pāti Māori summed this up quite well, in the sense that, you know, she said that there is a strong undercurrent there. There's an underbelly, I think she said, of racism and of misogyny in this country that's been there for, you know, a very, very long time. The difference at the moment is that minority of people feel, like they've got license to abuse candidates who are Māori or Pacifica or women or a combination of the above, in ways that they haven't felt that they had permission to do so in previous election campaigns. And like I said, I think the reasons for that are several and they're complex. But the point is that, you know, you do have people in this country who are, kind of have very violent thoughts, and in particular towards Māori and women, and they feel right now that they are able to air those in public and right up to and including potentially acts of violence.
One politician in particular that has come under criticism for race baiting is Winston Peters of New Zealand First, and you've compared the language of Winston Peters to former US President Donald Trump, and this is a comparison that has been made before. Why did you make this comparison?
You know, I wasn't actually just talking about Winston Peters. You know, I would include David Seymour and the ACT Party and others in that as well. I think what I said is that it is incumbent upon all politicians to make sure that we're not using language that emboldens and empowers, that kind of underbelly to feel like they've got any any permission to engage in either verbal or written or physical acts of violence. And the reason I compared that with Donald Trump is, you know, we saw under Donald Trump, he may not have directly, he may or may not have, I mean, this is obviously before the courts, may or may not have directly incited violence. But on his watch, there were people in the United States that felt that they had permission to, you know, attack people of color and women and so on in that society, and to take to the streets with sort of, you know, kind of essentially neo-fascist type movements and so on. That they felt that they had in Donald Trump a leader, someone who spoke for them, and that it was kind of their time. And I think that that is roughly analogous to what you see happening now. So I think that there are some politicians who are exploiting some people's fears that there's some kind of Māori takeover that's occurring in our society, which is just nonsense. They're doing that in order to whip up a few votes because they know that it works. And that, you know, ultimately, when they even, you know, use frankly relatively mild language, it does call what we say is a dog whistle to those people who are a minority of people who then feel that they can, you know, that actually maybe they're in a majority and that they have permission to act like that.
What would be your message to voters who care about this issue but might not have considered voting in this election?
Look, I mean, voting is absolutely critical. And, you know, I think that some of the tactics that are being used by some politicians are actually designed to disgust people and to put them off voting. It's actually a form of voter suppression. And the antidote is voting. You know, the way that we can overcome this is by ensuring that we've got a majority of people in Parliament who of whatever political parties who you know are strongly stand against racism, who understand that you know we have a shared responsibility under the Treaty of Waitangi for our common future, and who call out sort of acts of violence and say, actually, this is not the kind of country we want to see that. And actually, that is the vast majority of people. My experience of New Zealand is that we're very proud of the Treaty of Waitangi. We know it's got, you know, that we've had a very checkered history at best in relation to it, but actually it is one of the things that distinguishes us from other countries like Australia and so on, and that we know that we're making at least incremental progress based on it. So I think, you know, we need to have more people who are willing to get up and say that and point that out, because that, in my experience, is the vast majority of New Zealanders' view.
I wanted to touch on Winston Peters again, because he has been a particular figure who has also been accused of spreading another type of misleading information, which is about the climate crisis. And so he's apparently said at public meetings that carbon dioxide is 0.04% of the Earth's atmosphere, and of that 0.04%, human effect is 3%. And he's also told voters that New Zealand is a low-emitting country compared to other countries. What is your opinion on these statements that downplay the climate crisis?
Well, I'm not going to engage directly with what he's saying, because it's actually a political tactic designed to bring attention onto the kind of ridiculous things that he says and onto him. So the more we talk about the absurd things that Winston or David Seymour say, the more attention there is on them and their campaigns, and the more support they get. So I'm frankly not interested in what he says about climate change or about the Treaty of Waitangi or whether Māori are Indigenous or not or anything like that. Because ultimately, you know, that's playing him at his game, which is we're just talking about Winston. And I'm not here to talk about Winston. I'm here to talk about the Greens and what our vision is for the future of this country. You know, like the idea that we can actually have a society that is inclusive of everybody that makes sure that everybody has a place to live, that everybody can afford the rent, that everybody can afford to go out and buy groceries, and that we tackle climate change. That's what we stand for at this campaign. And that's frankly what I'm interested in talking about, not other political parties.
But you would agree that it is untrue what he is saying?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's talking science and he's not a scientist. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and the scientists themselves have debunked it completely.
A prominent concern that is raised by certain parties of the right about climate action is the impact on farmers in rural New Zealand. What policies do the Greens have to advance the interests of New Zealand farming while in a climate crisis environment?
Well, I think that you've actually kind of summed it up at the same time, is that we have to do both. And I think the problem that we've got is that there are some people who will consistently say that you can't take action on climate change without shutting down food production, and that's just not true. We actually know that the future of food production has to be lower emissions and in this country, higher value. So everything that we propose, everything that the Greens propose, is about ensuring that farmers are supported through the transition from what has historically been a low-value commodity, mass production model of farming, to something that's sustainable, that's high value, where farmers actually make more money than they do at the moment, even whilst they're reducing pollution.
We've seen that the head of the Climate Change Commission, Rod Carr, has warned that if we don't figure out how to make milk and meat products with low emissions, that countries that can afford to buy elsewhere will do so. What plans do the Greens have for innovation in this area?
Well, the primary method that we've got for reducing emissions is to replace the proposed Hiwaka Ekanoa proposal, which we just don't think will work, with a farmer-to-farmer, peer-to-peer system where those farmers that can innovate and work out how to reduce their emissions and make more money at the same time are able to essentially trade some of their allowance with other farmers down the road who aren't as fleet of foot. And what we believe that means is that it's the only way that you can guarantee that emissions will come down, but it also encourages innovation because the most innovative farmers will find that they're making more money than they do at the moment, and the ones that aren't that innovative or slow to move will find that they face higher costs. And so ultimately that is a system that leaves everything in the hands of farmers and encourages innovation at the farm level.
That was Green Party co-leader James Shaw on violence against politicians and considering the climate crisis in the farming industry.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party.
The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.